We acknowledge the traditional custodians of the unceded lands this podcast is recorded from, the Yugambeh and Cammeraygal peoples.
We pay our respects to the elders of past and present and celebrate the diversity of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples and their ongoing cultures and connection to country.
You're listening to the Mum's Gone Climbing podcast.
We're on a mission to deliver high-quality climbing and adventure resources to badass climbing mamas.
And redefine motherhood one episode at a time.
With incredible guests.
Very bad humour.
And just enough Kleenex moments to keep things interesting.
So grab yourself a cuppa or plug us in on the way to the crag.
As we bring you the latest beta from the Mum's Gone Climbing crew. Hi guys, welcome to the show. I am Eva Rosenbaum.
And I am Nell Gao, and we will be your hosts for today's episode of the Mum's Gone Climbing podcast. We are welcoming the amazing Amanda Watts back to the show. She's our first returned guest and she's our last guest of this series.
Yay!
So exciting. But before we kick off into conversations, let's give a big shout out to our sponsors for today's episode and for this series, Urban Climb and Climbing Anchors. Urban have amazing gyms around Australia. They've got one up in Townsville, three in Brisbane at West End, Milton and Newstead, and two down in Victoria at Collingwood and Blackburn. We absolutely love these guys, and they've actually got lots of great events and things coming up in March. So I thought we'd just run through a couple because why not?
It's a packed calendar.
I haven't even put everything that they've got in March in this little thing here. So there's even more going on, but I was like, oh, stop. We don't have time to go through all of this. You can go to their website, go to their, you know, what's coming up page, and they've got so much on. So on the 15th of March in Brisbane, there's a free screening at the West End Gym in Uncommon Ground Cafe, which has got lots of yummy treats and drinks. And they have a free screening of resistance climbing. If you missed out on seeing Real Rock 17 last year, this is an amazing film about the Palestinian climbing community. Have you seen this, Eva?
Yes. I have. Incredible.
Yeah, I actually want to go back and watch it again. So wonderful, wonderful documentary for so many reasons. So you can go and check that out in Brisbane. On the 19th of March in Blackburn down in Victoria, they have a Fear of Falling 2-hour workshop that's happening, which I honestly think is quite a pervasive challenge within our community, I would say.
Yep, I think anyone can relate. Well, we had two episodes on it with Rebecca, remember?
Yes. Yeah, I do remember. So you do have to register for these things. So you do have to jump on the website to do it. But go check it out. 2-hour workshop, such a good snippet of time that you can like really put into improving your climbing. So go and check that out. 19th of March, Blackburn. 22nd of March, they're having their first social comp, up in Townsville, Pump Fest. And it's so much fun. They do these at their other gyms. It's just about getting out there, getting with the community and having a great time. So check that out, Townsville Climbers. And on the 23rd and 24th of March, also in Blackburn, they've got a come and try weekend for adaptive climbers. So if you or someone you know with a disability is keen to give indoor climbing a go, the crew from Adaptive Climb Victoria will be there. So it's going to be a great weekend. You do also have to register for that. So please go and check out their website. But so many fun things happening at Urban.
What a lineup.
I know. Like, seriously, these guys must be so busy.
Our other incredible sponsor who are also very busy are the wonderful Climbing Anchors. You guys know them by now. They have stores in New South Wales, in Alexandria, and then mini stores at Lane Cove and Waterloo, and in Victoria in Fitzroy. You also are probably well aware, if you're not, get on board. They have a dedicated code just for our community. It gives you 12.5% off everything in store and online, except for sale items. The code is, it's changed this year, it's 20MGC24. Get in there, get all the things you need. They've got some awesome sales on at the moment as well. They've got like 60% off some camp harnesses, 50% off some approach shoes, Like the discounts are so intense that you're like, I'm just going to buy that because I'll save money even if I don't need it, right? That's how I should.
I know, it's always the way you kind of get lured into things, isn't it? You're just like, yeah, this is definitely saving money by spending money.
That's right. They've also got some So Ill shoes that have landed their way. Yeah. They look amazing. Now, tell us how you became familiar with So Ill.
Yeah, well, I mean, like there was the Jason Momoa thing, which we'll cover in a second. But also I did find them through a little like short doco that I watched about their nonprofit work. So they actually, quite a few years ago, connected with Kevin Georgeson, which is the other climber that was in Dawn Wall with Tommy Caldwell.
That's how
most people would know him. But he had already been kind of like working in this area of community engagement with underprivileged, you know, kids and that sort of thing. And he wanted to, he had this like brilliant plan for a project. And so he connected with So Ill's founder, and that's when they brought into reality their nonprofit, which is called One Climb. So it kind of like began from this shared desire they had to take kids climbing and also take climbing to kids. So they've partnered up with Boys and Girls Clubs across America, and, you know, they're building climbing walls, or they're facilitating kids coming to other climbing facilities and just like creating this path of access for those who, I guess, wouldn't usually have
That's
access.
Amazing.
It's brilliant. They have such a wonderful website that shares like lots of stories with some really great video clips. And you can donate to One Climb as well to help, you know, be part of this movement. So we'll chuck those links into the show notes. So yeah, that's the story of what I know about So Ill more than actually wearing their shoes, which I would also love to do at some point.
And any other stories you want to share?
So after, like, not last episode, the episode before, when we got onto Hot Sauce and then we got onto So Ill, and I kind of like said, oh yeah, because I used to have an obsession with Jason Momoa, and he also partnered up with them to do, I don't know, I think he's got a range with them. But I have then just said to Eva, did I ever tell you about why I did start this kind of whatever? Obsession is a strong word, but.
And I got the sense that this was a story that we should all get to hear.
So the story is, it's possible that Mum's Gone Climbing was created because of Jason Momoa.
For those listening along at home with jaws on the floor, this is also the first I've ever heard of this. Go on.
So many years ago when I was a mum of two young kids and actually really struggling mental health wise and having multiple breakdowns every week, and probably not doing too well as far as being connected to community or anything else, I watched this ad. I didn't know it was an ad. I thought it was a short film because it's so beautiful.
Very short.
It's actually like a good like 6 to 10 minutes. It's like a decent size.
Oh,
sure. Okay. Yeah, yeah. I'll send it to you.
Okay, please.
And it was about Jason Momoa, and it's a kind of this beautiful little film about kind of like him talking about his passion and where his creative side comes from and why he loves climbing and why he loves skating and music and art. And it all kind of also came back to his mother, and that she had introduced him to all of these things. And I bawled my way through the whole thing. And now Eva's looking emotional too.
Oh, no. And now I feel, because that's not where I thought this story was going. But that's actually really lovely.
I know. So, yes, I watched this little thing, which I watched 3 times before I realized it was actually an ad for pants.
What an ad.
And, beautiful ad. So it really moved me because I was like, my kids have no idea what my passions are. I am literally just surviving. And I decided I would go climbing again. And it was because
That's actually really beautiful. I do feel a little bit bad because my mind was definitely elsewhere, like borderline in the gutter, you know? I was like, tell us, Nell, about why you're familiar with Jason Momoa. let's all listen.
No, it was absolutely, it was 100% an emotional, like, moving moment. And that's the reason why I became so interested in him as a human, because I loved this story. And then I went and started climbing again. And then this beautiful community came, and like all these amazing things have come.
Do you think we should write to him and tell him?
It's possible.
I feel like that he might jump on that. You know, I mean, I'm not very fast, but I know there would be a lot of women in the community who would be rather excited to have some involvement with Jason Momoa. Do you think?
We could,
I'm going to write to him.
We could probably line something up. You know, like most people want to come and talk to us. So, yeah, I'm sure that could do. But, yeah, no, I think that whole thing was really lovely, because it really was such a beautiful reminder of what we do, you know, what our parents have passed on to us. And then he in turn talked about him then passing it on to his own children. So it's that beautiful flow of like these experiences that we can share together that really touch our heart, that really like inspire us. Yeah. So
what's important in life. Well, that was lovely.
It was lovely. You know what else is lovely?
Tell me, our conversation with Amanda.
Yeah, I know, right? So I actually really enjoyed this. It kind of felt like we were just like sitting down with a cup of tea having a chat.
Yeah, very much so. Amanda's very good at that though, which I think is why it's so such a pleasure to listen to her, right? Mm.
Yeah, that is actually
true. Just naturally take in a lot of what she's saying.
Yeah, there's always that deepness to the conversations that you have with Amanda. And this one is just, you know, I don't even know that we really talk about climbing all that much, but we really delve into age and aging and the perceptions that our society and ourselves and a lot of the climbing community have around aging and the limitations.
Or lack of limitations, if you talk to Amanda.
Or lack of limitations. This is right. So, yeah, Amanda has like this dream to kind of rewrite the narrative on getting older. And I am all for it. I think it's freaking amazing.
It's inspiring. I love it.
Should we drop in and let everyone else listen in?
Yep, let's do it.
Amanda, welcome back to the Mum's Gone Climbing podcast.
Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. And yeah, so Amanda is our first returning guest on the podcast. She was actually our first guest that we ever had, so it's pretty special.
I had forgotten that. I didn't realize I was the first.
Yeah. I hadn't fully forgotten, but when I was sat down to write our show notes out for today, I was like, oh my gosh, you were our first guest and you're also our first returning guest. So it's actually, I kind of love it. I love the symbolism in that. It's beautiful.
Yeah, that's nice. I like it too. Yeah.
But for those of you who didn't listen to the episodes, go back and listen to them. I think it's episode 3 and 4 of the podcast. But Amanda, could you give us a little bit of an intro to who you are, what you do, and anything interesting you think listeners should know?
Which hat do I feel like putting on? It's funny because in my private practice I've got this homework that I give people, and one of the first questions on this homework, it's a body image health check, and the first thing is, who am I? And I get them to answer that. And so I guess if I start with that, I'm a mum to a 9-year-old, a partner to a guy called Tom, who's awesome. He's like my soulmate. Second marriage. No, we're not married. Second-ish marriage-ish, if he would marry me. And I'm a sports dietitian, rock climber first, trail runner second. Did I cover sports dietitian as well? Did I say
you,
that?
You mentioned it.
Yeah.
It's like a sneaky kind of like, oh, yeah, this is the,
I know
it's, the career that, oh,
it's funny. It's not how I identify. Yeah.
It's so funny. I love that though, because I think it's a really good nod to the fact that we are so many different things, you know, like it's, I like a lot of people just try and make things one dimensional, like you're this, you fit into this category, but it's like, no, it's not really the way it works. But I love that. Very beautiful intro.
Today, Amanda, so we're going to talk to you about something that you're very, very passionate about. I was about to try and work out which hat it fits under, but I think it would be relevant to, every hat. And it's something that affects us all in one way or another, and that is age, and probably more specifically getting older and what that process entails. I want to kick off with your thoughts about how we as a society generally talk and think about age.
Oh, it's awful. Like if I had to put it in a statement, my dream is to help people age positively. because I think, number one, if we aren't cool with getting older, but also if we take the stigma of old out of it and just think about it as grapes turn into wine, right? So we're becoming really awesome wines as we get older, then the only time we're worthwhile is from 20 to 30 years old or 20 to 35. And bugger that, like I know so much more now at 45 than I did then. I also have the luxury of having a partner who's 15 years younger than me. So I get this great point of reference. So in my job, working as a dietitian and at the Cliff and less so in the running community, what I hear from people is, oh God, I feel old. Oh, my knee hurts or my ankle's sore. Oh, my body's so sore. And I think, that's not true. It's true that you feel that way, but you're blaming it on age. And actually, I have a 30-year-old who I've been with for, I was 31 now, so we've been together for 12 years. And I know that he felt like that from 19 to 31. And so you can't categorically call him old or blame it on being old. So I call bullshit on that one. And the reason I'm so passionate at calling bullshit on that is because I also look after some old people. So I know what 110 looks like, and I know what 90, 80, 85, 70 looks like. And if you think you're old at 50, you're screwed because you've still got another 50 years to be telling yourself this story about how old you are and how, oh, better not stretch or move, or, oh, climbing is going to feel hard because of how old my body is, when actually it's still really young.
Yep.
Is that enough of a rant that explains that?
It's not a rant. I love it. And this reminds me of when we first spoke to you, because you're so, a lot of what you talk about, you live right through your work. I mean, as you've just said, through your personal life in a way. And I think that's where the really important stuff comes from, right? Like that's where passion comes from, when you've had enough exposure to something that you've really developed an opinion that you want to share. So I love it. I don't think it's a rant at all.
No, I think I could have ranted more, to be honest. But it did actually tweak a few things in my mind of just like, oh, this language that you're talking about, like, oh, it's because I'm getting old. Oh, it's everything's harder now. We don't heal as well now that we're older. It's just like I use that language, and yet I'm also like, hate ageism, but it's just so much part of our culture, you know, particularly our society. I think there are other cultures and societies around the world that place a lot more value on age and a lot more, you know, and a lot more value on their elders, but that's not really what our society is like. And I hate that it's become so pervasive and that it shapes our worldview so much, because it's just so limiting. And I hate that so much, which actually I'm interested, because when we were doing our notes back and forth about this, you popped in there limitation approach versus expansive approach. And I don't know if this is like relevant to what we've just been talking about, but what exactly do you mean when you say that?
Well, you know, if you go with climbing or running, so let's look at those two as examples. If you pull onto a climb or look at a boulder problem and you think, I haven't got a hope in hell of doing that, I'm not going to be able to get to the first hold, it's a very good chance you won't. You know, like you've already told yourself you're not going to be able to do it. But if you say to yourself, I'm just going to give it a go, I think there's a good chance I'm going to do that. Or if I fall off, I'm going to have learned something. It's a really different, you're not living in that limiting belief. The same with running. You know, every time I run over 20 kilometers, someone sends me a message, oh my God, you're amazing. I can't believe you did that. Do you know how you run a half marathon? Is by signing up to a half marathon. And then you go, I'm going to try and walk run it, or I'm going to try and run it. Now, I put the caveat over that, where there's people that have some disabilities or limitations physically. They've got, you know, bad injuries that are going to limit them with that. But then I would say, get two of your friends that can carry you over the bits when you need help. And as a three, you can still do a half marathon, you know. So I think I live in this world where I see people, you know, we've only got one life. We've only got one shot at this. So why not just believe that you can actually do anything that you think you maybe can, or think that you want to, and have a go? because better to fall off the climb than have never got on it. And better to have signed up for a half marathon, try and do some training, decide that actually you hate running and not do it, than think that a half marathon is beyond you forever. You know, I'm just not a runner. I couldn't do that. It takes so much. Or yeah. So I think the expansiveness is about taking any time you find yourself blaming something for why you aren't doing something or why you can't do it. It's like catching yourself and going, hang on. I think I'm actually just bullshitting myself, really. Why don't I just have a go? Does that explain it?
No, it 100% explains it. It's really funny because a group of me and my friends, the climbing moms, we did a triathlon at the beginning of this year. There was like 12 of us or something.
Awesome.
And it was a mini one, so it was like a shorter condensed version, but still like more exercise than I would usually do within an hour. So, you know, it was big for us, and none of us had done a triathlon before. And I, for the last few years, had been like that exact thing that you just said, I'm not a runner. That was my thing. I'm not a runner, which was actually bullshit because I won my year 7 cross country and beat half the boys as well. So
exactly.
Yeah. Like I was, you know, where did I get that belief from? But I guess what I learned was from doing the training and chipping away, actually, once you start practicing something, once you start putting time into it, whatever it is, you're going to get better at it. Okay, you might not be the best in the state or the country or the world, but you will get better at it. And I think it was such a good wake-up call for me to be like, stop making excuses or stop assuming that you can't do something just because you haven't given it a go. Like, that's a really bad reason to assume you can't do something.
Yeah, putting the limiting belief on it. And that's the dialogue around aging is. I find it thoroughly boring being at the cliff at the moment because of that dialogue. It's like, it's easier for you because you're so young. Like, no, it's not necessarily actually. Like, you know, if you've got 27 years of climbing under your belt and this base level of training, that other person can't have that yet. You know, it's like studying. I'm a much better dietitian these days than I was when I first graduated because I've just got more hours under my belt. So yeah, I think there's that. And also I think it's questioning yourself, what do I gain from telling myself that I am just old now? Like, I mean, maybe some people find some relief in that. For me, it terrifies me, the thought that there's this, I don't know, this number that you go through, 50, and that's it. All the fun stuff's over. It's nothing but TV. You know, you're going to sit there and watch old reruns of Roseanne or something, and you drink a beer and your ugly couch, you know, like something like that. The Golden Girls. Yeah.
I did like the Golden Girls.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I'm thinking about what you're saying, and I think it's so true. We do have this predisposition, I think, certainly in our society, to write off someone based on age when it comes to physical capabilities. And I think when I put my medical hat on, you know, there's no denying that as we age, we face physical challenges that many of us don't face at a younger age. And we do have to, I suppose, accommodate our body's changing needs in a way. But I don't think for a second that that needs to be negative, or that equates automatically to, I can do less now because I'm older.
So that's the thing that I see in the people that walk into my office is, I'm this age now, and so I am just going to be 5 kilos heavier or 10 or 20. And that's because I'm this age now, or because I've been through menopause. So that's the black and white thing that they say. I can't, you know, my knees, I just can't run now. I can't do these things because of my age. It's not possible. It's like this door has shut for them. And so then that accelerates aging, you know. And so like you know, I read the research on aging, and about what we need to do with our body, what we need to eat, and the rules of engagement from a medical point of view are for how our body's going to change. And the things we need to do are, instead of looking at the limitations and going, this is just because. It's like, okay, I am going to go through menopause, or I'm going to go, or I am through menopause, wherever you're at, or I'm 60. What do I need to do now to have the best quality of life I can possibly have for the rest of my life? Because the choice you make at 40 or 50 or 60 or 70 is going to really impact that last couple of decades of your life. And lying in a nursing home sucks. Like, I look after people in nursing homes. It's not very fun. You know, they don't like the food. It's pretty depressing. It's not engaging. The people that get to be independent and stay at home have awesome lives. So I think that's where, instead of thinking about the, I can't do this because, it's like, okay, I am now 45. So what have I got coming ahead of me? I do not feel like getting out of bed at 5:30. But if I don't get out of bed at 5:30 because I've got a kid and a really busy life, I'm not going to get to do this thing that actually makes me feel good. So I'm just going to step up and get up, and then I'm going to spend the rest of the day feeling like I've got sand in my eyes, but also happy with myself that I actually had got out of bed at 5:30 and did that thing.
Sand in the eyes, I can relate to at the moment. Yes.
We both just started giggling as you said, like, oh, I know what she's talking about. The sand in the eyes.
I was just going to say, that's exactly like what Amanda's just sort of spoken about is exactly what I wanted to ask a bit more about. You know, like, you're talking about the science of food and exercise in relation to aging, and you've had extensive exposure to that as a dietitian, both as a dietitian and an athlete. So how can we better support ourselves to keep doing what we love whilst working with an aging body?
I think the first thing is you've got to, number one, like, we're lucky, right? We love climbing and we love doing stuff. But I think if you don't, you've got to find something you do love enough. Now, I've got a love-hate relationship with climbing. I'm a bit bored at the moment and need some more adventures. Like, going to the same cliffs is killing me right now. But I still love the movement of climbing. So I engage in that part, you know, when I'm not, when I haven't got people to climb with or when other stuff happens. But I do have, a lady walked up to me, a mum from school, the other day. I was buying veggies in Totoro's, and she said, oh, I just said to my husband that I want a body like yours, but you work really hard for it. And I thought, I don't actually. Like, I don't work hard for it. I just do stuff I love doing, and that helps me to stay fit. So I think firstly, we've got to find something we love enough to get out of bed at 5:30 and do. And I do not love running 8 kilometres at 5:45 in the morning, but I love other things about it. So I think it's, you know, fleshing out what it is that you like about those things. And then secondly, you need to work out what routine's going to work with your life. And then I think how you load your body in a way that works for you. So for me, I've been climbing for 27 years, so I can do a lot of it and it doesn't hurt me. But there's other people that are newer to climbing, or they decide they're only going to fingerboard and they get injured really quickly because they're loading up too much weight. So I think it's being really real with yourself about how much feels like enough, how many minutes you're actually physically exercising. Because, you know, people go to the gym and feel like they've been there for 2 hours, but they've pulled on 10 times for 30 seconds. A moonboard problem, for example, takes 30 seconds and there's a lot of chatting in between. So if you're there for 2 hours and you do 10 moonboard problems, it's actually not that many minutes that you're pulling on. So I think be real with yourself about how much exercise you're actually doing. And then you've got to eat to support it. So the things that, and we'll talk about strength training. So the things I see with women is they go, oh my God, I'm hitting this time in my life where I feel like I'm putting more weight on around my middle. That's it. Intermittent fasting, time restricted eating. If I can get, I'm going to skip breakfast. I'm not hungry anyway. You know, I'm busy. I'm just going to roll with that. You know, those old sort of disordered eating things from teenage life pop into your head and you're like, yeah, awesome. I've skipped breakfast. Now I've got all this extra energy budget to work with. I can feel myself losing weight. But what they're actually doing is increasing cortisol levels, which is promoting fat storage and muscle loss. And that's not helpful when you're trying to be strong and healthily age. So I think making sure that you're eating to support what you're doing, not skipping meals, and knowing what you're doing with your food is really important. And then the last thing is the strength training stuff. You know, I spend hours every week manipulating women and men into finding a way to commit to me that they're going to start strength training. And by strength training, it's not like, you know, bicep curls like Jane Fonda in, you know, G-string leotard and leg warmers. I say to them, you have to make this noise at least twice with each rep, you know, with each set. So it's like, you want that noise a couple of times, or it's not heavy enough. And we want to try and link those exercise bouts every 48 hours. So, you know, 3 times a week of lifting heavy stuff for 30 minutes is what we want to do.
And how do you find it's received when people are sort of, if that's not at all something that they're used to working into their lives?
I think for 90% of them, I say in a cute enough way by the end of it, and I've talked at them in a fear, like in a way, you know, well, I'm like, you know, what would you, well, this is one, a line I use with them. It's like, how old are you now? I'm 60. Okay. Well, I plan to live till 120. I don't know about you, but like, let's say you're conservative and you want to live till you're 100. Well, you've got 40 years left. So if you were 20 and you were planning your life from 20 to 60, or take it down to 20 years, 20 to 40, what energy would you bring to that? And what would you be planning for? And what would you want for yourself? And that's what we want you to want for yourself now. And most of them are so, you see this little light go on because they're so excited that someone sees them as a proper human and not an old person, that they're like, hell yeah, I'll do some strength training if you tell me to.
How awesome.
I just got goosebumps. But I think that's the benefit of bringing them back to the values of like what you really want out of life and what you want your life to look like. Because I think if we just focus on, oh, what's it going to be like if I'm going to be going, ugh, like every 40 seconds or whatever, it's not super appealing. But when you can bring it back to like, but this is what it'll mean in my life, whether that, you know, I can go out and do a beautiful big hike, or I can keep up with my kids and my grandkids. You know, if I had that vitality as I age, I think that's so powerful, because we've been fed, like, as we've been saying, this picture of getting older as, you know, being less than, not being capable. And so I think that's like, it's so stuck in our brain that to replace that with something more positive is really, really helpful. Yeah. It's actually interesting that we're having this conversation, because I just had this moment when I first started climbing, you know, back in my early 20s, and I was at the cliffs at Kangaroo Point in Brisbane near the river there, and we were climbing with some friends, and one of the people in our group was this woman who, I think she would have been in her, you know, 50s or 60s, which to a young 20-year-old is old, right? She climbed so well, like 1,000 times better than I climbed, and looked effortless. And that was like, that was the moment that my head, that a light switched on in my head that was like, oh, age is not a thing. Age is not what I thought it was. Like, I remember that moment so clearly. I remember what she looked like. I don't know her name because I don't climb with her again after that. But it was such a powerful moment for me. I would love to see more representation in that space as well. Like,
I think that's it, because I think about that for me. Like, when I think about the things I want to create in my life still, you know, and I follow so many things on Instagram that are I've been sending them to Carly, actually, Carly LeBreton, to help her with some stuff at the moment. But I follow those things, like, actually even some of them are men's things, but like, you know, dream big, you know, dream big and you can make whatever happen, or this person started a business at 40 and this person started a business at 45 and this person wrote their first best-selling novel at 50. But I think, and so I think to myself, you know, I can't be an Olympian anymore. My days are going to be numbered of being able to hit the grades that I really want to hit in climbing. Like, they just, there will just be a regression at some point. And it's really, I don't feel teary about that anymore, which is nice. Because the things that go with that are not being able to have a baby anymore. You know, like, that's, I think that's a bit, that's actually a big deal. Like, you know, I'm 45, it's time to get a new IUD put in. And I'm like, well, if I've got a really low chance of getting pregnant at this age, do I really need to? But, you know, apparently you still have enough of a chance that it's not worth risking. But, you know, you're thinking, I've got only a certain amount of eggs left. What a strange concept to process. And then tie that in with being an athlete and a power athlete, because that's what, you know, hard climbing is, and thinking, wow, at some point I'm going to hit the top of the hill and that's it. You know, like, I will just get a little bit weaker. I can maintain, I'll be able to maintain climbing, you know, a grade that a lot of people really want to climb, but it doesn't matter because it's all relative to you, right? And so I think, and then in business, it's like I've got so many, I've got like 10 different things that lives I still want to live. And you're like, but if I'm old, can you? And so I think for me, thinking we just need to keep putting it out there. Like, we need to keep seeing women of every single age on magazines, sponsored, on Instagram, on Facebook, on podcasts like you guys, as if we are championed like the 20-year-olds are, that are going to be the next, you know, I remember someone saying to Tom in the car park, because he was with me probably when he was 21, oh, the next generation, you should see the next generation of climbers. And Tom's like, I am the next generation, buddy. What do you mean? He didn't say that at the time because he's just not that sort of person to say that. But, you know, I'm more the sort of person that would say that. So I think we have to see ourselves as the next generation, even if it is the next generation of 40 to 50 or 50 to 60.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. That's so powerful. And I guess you brought up an interesting thing there of like, not all, only are we aging, but we're aging women, which is a very different thing to aging men. And you just have to look at all the big movies to figure that out, because old guys get so many like lead roles, but to see an older lady in a lead role or in an important role in movie, like, you're seeing it more, which is fantastic.
I was going to say, the narrative is slowly changing, right?
Yeah.
But slow.
Like, did you?
But there are some steps towards.
Yeah. Did either of you watch Jamie Lee Curtis's acceptance speech, the one that came out recently? It's great. I'm going to send it to you, and I'll share it as well. But it was pretty much just about like, she breaks down in tears, but in like amazing, passionate tears, the way Jamie Lee Curtis does, about like being up there accepting the award as an older woman. Like, it's just, it's the best thing in the world. So I'll send that through.
That'd be cool. I actually saw Gwyneth Paltrow on Friday night in Sydney as well, which was...
How was it? Because you were like, we were messaging at the time, and I was kind of getting the vibe that you were like, I don't really know why I'm going to this, but I'm like going. It'll be interesting.
I'm not a fan-y kind of person, you know? Like, I'm not someone that would wet myself at the airport if I saw Taylor Swift, you know? Like, I think she's like, I'm going to Taylor Swift. I think she's a trailblazer and really inspiring. But I guess I think I see so many women like that. I look for the awesomeness in everyone I work with and everyone I spend time with. So I don't like to put people that far ahead of other people, I suppose. So anyway, so I'm like, well, I'm going to see Gwyneth Paltrow, but I don't want to stand there and get her autograph, and I'm not going to pay $1,000 for a ticket to get a photo with her. I would, however, like to have a coffee with her and pick her brain about how she's navigated things that she has in the world, because, yeah, crazy time that to be an actress, I think, when she was, sorry, my dog is barking at the door and Tom and Audrey are meant to be looking after her and they're not. but so I went mainly because I went with two of my closest friends who are businesswomen, and we were interested in if she was going to give anything away about, you know, running her empire Goop and, you know, going transitioning from, it's like, why would you do that? You've got crap loads of money. You could just do whatever you want. Why would you start a big brand like that, and how did you do that? And some of the things that she says are so at odds, like, you know, her fasting and her juice cleanses and stuff. I just want to sit her down and say that's wrong. But she does it with just such kind of grace and cuteness, and that I find that really also quite inspiring, that she just owns who she is so much. So I didn't know what I was going to see when I went there, but she was awesome. For a lot of people, she was probably kind of boring in a way, because she's 50 now, over 50. So she's done heaps of work on herself, had heaps of therapy, knows herself pretty well, kind of made peace with the decades of her life and the parts of her life that were tricky, knows that growth comes from the hard times, and being rich and famous does not exclude you from that at all. You know, it's funny, someone said to her, you were filming, Jackie O said to her, you were filming Seven, and you were starting to fall in love with Brad Pitt. How was that for you? And she's like, how do you think that was? 90s Brad Pitt. Yeah.
Which, yeah, like you know, you and everyone else in the world.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So it was, I don't know, it was kind of cool to see someone that's a few years older than me. She's still grappling with what it's like to have a body that's aging. And, you know, she said her husband, she's getting ready for the shower or whatever, and he looks at her and says, you are so hot. And she said that she looks at him and she's like, how can you think that, you know, like on some days. And so I think, you know, she's held up as a beauty icon, I suppose, and she still has bad days about how she feels about how she looks and all that sort of stuff. But she just puts together her life practice to try and have enough roots in the ground to make her life feel good and full. And I think it's not that, you know, unless you want to have a facelift, then you're just going to have some wrinkles, aren't you? And she doesn't look to me like a facelift kind of girl. She's like, she looks like she's going with the wrinkle ride.
The wrinkle ride, I love it.
Yeah.
We had a bit of this conversation on another episode that's coming up in this series about the wrinkles and the embracing aging and all those sorts of things. It's an interesting topic to delve into, of like from a, I guess, a aesthetic point of view of whether you choose to try and halt that aging process in that way, or if you, you know, choose to embrace the wrinkles and go that way. Do you have like an opinion, or not really an opinion, what's your perspective from your own personal values when it comes to that sort of stuff?
Yeah, look, I'll come clean about some of that. I think that it's a sliding scale, right? From do you have facials? Do you use wrinkle cream? Do you put makeup on? Do you inject fillers into your face? Do you inject Botox into your face? You know, what's the level for you? And I think if you're doing it for you, it doesn't really matter. You know, I've got a photographer male friend who has had a full facelift, and every time I see him, he's like, here's the number of my person. I'm like, no, I can't. I just don't want to have a facelift. Mainly because I don't like the idea of surgery and it could go wrong. But for me, I was always curious about Botox in your forehead. Now, I'm a Perth girl, I was born in Western Australia. I was born in 1977, and I used to put coconut oil on my body to get more of a tan, because that's just what we did. And we had a pool when I was growing up. So, you know, wrinkles are my friend. And I've had a wrinkly forehead since my early 20s. And it turns out I've got a friend who runs Clements Organic. She's one of my best friends. She's a back sleeper. Back sleepers have less face wrinkles than side sleepers.
What is that a thing? Stop it.
I reckon it's a thing. We need to do a research
paper. I was like, hang on, is this research? That was a big claim.
I have these two, like, they look like antenna lines on each side of my forehead, and it's from sleeping on my side because I'm a side sleeper. Anyway, I'd always talked about, oh, I'd love to put Botox in my forehead. And Lee Cooge is a friend of mine. He's like, if you want to do it, stop bloody talking about it and try it. I'm like, but how can I, you know, I'm a rock climber, I run, you know, I'm into health, and I don't know, is that cheating? I think it's cheating. And do I really want to put a poison in my body? And then I've worked in the disability sector years ago, and they use Botox for contractures. I've got a friend who has it in her jaw because she grinds her teeth. And I'm like, oh, this is ridiculous. I'm going to die wondering. And so I have a limit. And so I've tried Botox only in my forehead. I'm not in. And somebody said to me, you're only doing it for what other people think. And I'm like, oh no, I'm not. Not at all. I don't care. I care about Tom finding me attractive, but I actually have no interest in having, you know, attention from another male, actually. And, you know, it's nice to look nice in a photo, but I don't care to spend enough time practicing my smile in the mirror like my sister did when we were little, to actually be able to take a particularly awesome photo of me. But, you know, COVID, I spent all this time with a mask on, and all I could see was my forehead. And so I tried it, and it felt fresh. It felt stiff, but it felt fresh. And so
this is actually amazing, because the other conversation that we had, it was because neither or I have done Botox or fillers or anything, and just don't feel drawn to it, I guess, more than anything. But what it came back to in that conversation is, it does come back to, if you're looking at what the intention is, what your values are, and how you feel afterwards. And we all conceded.
Yeah, I feel 28 on the inside. And so it's like, I don't know, you know, I spent like probably 3 years contemplating it before I actually did it. And I was like, and a friend when I was having a training session, he's like, it's a slippery slope. You're just going to have everything done now. And I'm like, no, actually, I have no desire to stick plastic in my cheeks. No, like Godspeed to anybody who wants to do that. And I'm actually not religious, so I don't know why I said Godspeed. But I have no problem with what, you know, I'm 45. Do whatever you want. Do whatever you want. I don't have any judgment anymore at all about that stuff. I think people need to do what makes them feel good, but I think they need to love themselves from the inside first, or at some point. But so for me, it was when I look in the mirror, I feel like this person, and then when I have less wrinkles in my forehead, it feels like that person matches me better. I feel more hopeful. But yeah, I did wonder about things like, you know, your third eye. A friend said, well, what about your third eye? Like for your wisdom and stuff, if you stick Botox in there, are you going to lose your third eye? And so that I spent about a month contemplating that.
Do you feel like you lost it, or is it still there?
Nope.
Is your wisdom still there?
My wisdom is still there. My intuition's still there. My hackles still go up when they need to. No, nothing changed. Nothing changed. And Tom, I guess if Tom was black and white about it, he would – he doesn't care either way, actually. He has absolutely no need for me to do anything like that whatsoever, you know. He never notices variation in my weight, face, or if I put lipstick on, he thinks it looks different because I never wear lipstick. He'd love me with a wrinkly forehead. He would think that was great.
That helps as well, if whoever your partner is, whoever that you're the only person that you care about looking whoever for is accepting of whoever you are. It's wonderful.
It's quite a contentious topic, and I think in the climbing world it's more of a contentious topic because of where climbing comes from. You know, that like dirtbag, earthy, these days vegan, all that sort of stuff. So I think it's an interesting one, but I think it's better to be open about it. We haven't got anything to hide with that.
Absolutely. And to do what is right for you, right? Not what is right for other people's opinion of you. Okay, guys, we're going to wrap up the conversation there, and we will be back with the wonderful Amanda in 2 weeks for the second part of this incredible chat, where we talk about a lot of things, but I feel like the theme was friendship.
Definitely. Which we're all about.
Which we're all about. So in the meantime, have an amazing 2 weeks. Thank you, as always, for listening, and we'll see you back here for the final episode of Series 4.